Hi, it's Dan from A Bunch of Nuts, and you know, before we start this episode, I want to talk to you about mybookie.com. That's MyBookie. You know, a lot of people ask me who to bet on, and I'm not really sure who's going to win, but I do tell them to use MyBookie. And MyBookie.com, let me tell you, if you use promo code NUTS25, that's NUTS25, they will match you dollar for dollar, your deposit, dollar for dollar, and they'll give you an additional $25 on top of that. So make sure you go to MyBookie.com and use promo code NUTS25 to get started. Hello and welcome back to episode 22 of A Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan. Big Cass is not here this episode. He is actually on his honeymoon. So congrats to Big Cass to tying the knot and everything. But today I'm here with Colin Janan. You know him. We've had him on a bunch of times. He's our Ohio State writer, great writer. Check him out on armchairallamericans.com. How you doing today, Colin?
Oh, pretty good, Dan. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here as usual. Every time I come on, it's always a lot of fun, so.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I mean, what are you up to these days?
Oh, boy. Let's see. I'm a sophomore, first of all, so in college, so plenty of class every week. I'm doing some broadcasting at the student radio at Ohio State, and then just writing each week for Armchair. A little bit of college football, a little bit of baseball. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, you have some great articles. I love your analytical baseball articles. Like, I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but like, I'm a huge baseball nerd and all that. And definitely, if you love baseball articles, you gotta check out Colin's baseball writing. It is fantastic. I'm a big fan of it. And Colin, you have some big news. You have a new Twitter handle.
I do. It's at Colin Gannan, CollinGannan. So yeah, trying to build up that old follower base on there. So would definitely appreciate a follow. It's basically going to be just purely college football and pro baseball. I guess a little of some Browns talk too. So that's everything you'll find there.
Speaking of the Browns though, Denzel Ward, he is having a phenomenal season. And, oh my gosh, I didn't even see this coming. He's playing better in professional than he did at Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, so going into the draft, I was one of the few who said I wanted Baker at one, and I wanted Denzel Ward at four. So in my mind, there were a couple of things. First of all, that the Browns would never do that because it's the Browns. And two, that, you know, I thought Denzel Ward would be really good. I didn't think he'd be doing what he's doing now, because very few, if anybody's doing what he's doing now. The dude is just playing lights out.
Absolutely. I mean, when I saw Denzel Ward, Colin, I didn't think he had great ball skills. Like, I didn't think he was a great going to be a turnover machine like he is. We knew the tackling there, the hitting, you know, the run game support, all that, him blocking kicks. But I did not expect him to have three interceptions at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the three interceptions, he has a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, a blocked field goal. He's all over the place on the ball, not just shutting down his receivers.
Absolutely. And so going back to your new Twitter handle, I guess it's time to start with our first segment, the Cardale Jones tweet of the week, moving on from all the Browns talk. So Colin, did you have a good tweet?
Yeah, and actually, it's gonna swing it back to the Browns. So, firsthand, have you seen the rally possum?
Yes, I love that thing.
So this goes back to the Browns. They got their first win with the rally possum during the Jets game on Thursday Night Football. Well, the rally possum made another appearance Sunday morning before the Ravens game. So the Browns tweeted out a video of Bernie Kosar and Dustin Fox doing their weekly X's and O's in the film room video. But this week, it was breaking down the fundamentals of how to catch a possum by the tail. And it was excellent. I highly recommend checking it out. And I hope this lives on throughout the entire season.
I saw a funny tweet. I think it was retweeted by McNeil, or he might have tweeted it. And they want to change like the name from First Energy to like First Possum Stadium or something like that. I found that was pretty funny. McNeil's hilarious on Twitter.
I would say he's probably the best Cleveland follow by far. If you like any of the Cleveland sports teams, that's a good way to go.
Absolutely, I know. I mean, anything McNeil tweets honestly should be a nomination. But he would probably run away with this tweet every week. But I guess mine went to on Saturday night, the big fight happened, Colin, and that was pretty electric. And
who was it? I honestly didn't watch it. Was it Conor and Khabib?
Yep, it was Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. His name's so hard. His name is top 10 hardest names ever to pronounce. But the tweet is by John Hilberry. He says, Khabib Nurmagomedov looks like Moe Schrute, and I can't unsee it. And if you look at the picture, Colin, it's dead on.
I think I saw a picture of Khabib. I can see that. That's I just found your tweet. That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah.
Good nomination.
It got me laughing, and then it got me kind of thinking, like, into a good segue. And so, speaking of the fight, Conor McGregor, obviously, you know the whole situation. The dude jumped the cage and everything. Huge fight. Conor McGregor got hit. Khabib got, you know, didn't get the belt, but then he ended up getting it after, you know, he had to leave and all that good stuff. But Chase Winovich, though, apparently I saw an article today that he was being helped by Conor McGregor, like they met in person. And it was a very interesting article, Colin. I don't know if you saw it. It was by ESPN.
Yeah, I saw that one, yeah.
And basically on the article, I thought was so interesting. It just got me thinking, what if, you know, someone from Ohio State were to be a UFC, like, fighter? Who do you think would be a good fighter from Ohio State? It just got me thinking of college football players and, like, UFC fighting.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Boy, I think I'm going to say Chase Young. His I know his nickname on the team, I think, is like the Predator or something.
Yeah.
This dude, he's terrifying. He's huge, but he's probably also the fastest player on that defensive line. Boy, he would be a good UFC fighter. Him or I might have to say Tough Borland. Ooh. Not only because of his strength and speed, but I mean, with that first name, it's too easy. I think so. Those if I would have to split them between those two.
I was thinking, like, kind of like a flyweight, like, welterweight, smaller division. I was thinking of, like, Terry McLaurin, because I think he'd be, like, really scrappy. And, like, after those blocks and everything, I feel like he could really hit someone harder than, like, most people would think.
I like that pick, yeah. In fact, didn't he get, player of the week in the Penn State game for just blocking, purely for blocking?
Yeah, that just blows my mind.
Yeah,
player of the week,
perfect.
No catches, just blocks.
That's a good pick. I like that.
Yeah. So I guess moving on from, you know, that kind of fun little talk we had about the UFC fighters and players, we got to recap the Indiana game because that was closer than expected, and that was kind of nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I mean, boy, I think it was 28-20 at the half, correct? If I remember correctly. Yeah. 28-20 at the half. Yeah, that was nerve-wracking. The offense in the first half even still looked good. The defense in that first half struggled a lot. You know, I think we all expect this to an extent coming off of Penn State, coming, and also, I mean, Indiana, they're known for that, but Dwayne Haskins mentioned in his post game that they were still kind of hungover from Penn State last week. And, you know, after what happened at Iowa last year, I didn't think that was going to be the case this year.
Yeah, but it was definitely in the back of my mind when I saw that. I thought, you know, this could be a real, like, not a trap game, but if you look historically, Indiana has always played us tough. And I know some people who really don't follow Ohio State kind of gave us crap for, you know, keeping it such a close game. But if you really go back and look at the stats, Indiana always keeps it, you know, two-possession game. And sometimes they even lead. Like last year, they took the lead against us at home. But the thing is, they just don't play four quarters, in my opinion.
And many of those games were to the credit of Kevin Wilson, who's the offensive coordinator now at Ohio State. But, yeah, it's especially when you go back and look at the scores, it looks like Ohio State handled their business. Like, you're going to come back to this game 2 years from now and be like, oh, yeah, Ohio State blew out Indiana. But that's the case with every single time that Ohio State plays Indiana. It's close for the first half, a one-possession game. Either team could be leading. And then in the second half, Ohio State usually runs away for a 20-point win. It's just, it's kind of their MO when playing Indiana. I don't know why, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, for a team that hasn't beaten Ohio State in 30 years, well, 31 now, I guess, they just play us so well. I just can't get over it. Like, I remember 1 year, Jordan Howard, I think, ran for 200 yards on us. And Jalen Marshall luckily bailed us out because he had four touchdowns. That was the national championship year. But they were leading at home against us at home that on the road. Like, they were in the shoe. And it just blows my mind how a team that hasn't beaten us that long can be that, like, competitive against us.
Yeah, I don't know why it's every single time we play them. I don't know if it's just their offensive scheme that it's Ohio State doesn't feel like they need to prepare for because it's different than every other team they play, or whatever the case is. But boy, it's always their offense. I mean, usually their defense can never contain Ohio State's offense, but their offense for the first 2 to 3 quarters usually will go stride for stride with Ohio State.
But the thing is too, though, I think people gave our defense after that game kind of, you know, they kind of like said, oh, this isn't a championship defense and everything. But if you look at all the, like, the college football stats and everything, the most points we given up in a game was 31 in our first game to Oregon State. And those are kind of all garbage points. Alabama has also given up 31, but they did it this week against Arkansas. I know those are majority garbage points too, but we have only given up one 30-point game up until this point, which I think is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a couple of things about the defense for both sides of what people are looking at. Because first of all, this isn't college football of old. They're not 9-6 games in Big Ten snowy weather. That's just not what college football is anymore. College football now is 40 and 50 points a game for each team. So I think people are used to what college football used to be and what they expect out of an Ohio State defense. But at the same time, I think there are some legitimate concerns about the defense that definitely need to be addressed to turn this into a championship team.
Obviously, I think, one, we got to get Nick Bosa healthy. But honestly, do you think this Nick Bosa injury could be almost like a blessing in disguise because it allows these other guys to step up? And then when he gets back, we might have a more deep defense, more experience and everything.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think the biggest problem with the defensive line right now is everyone's getting injured. I mean, Jonathan Cooper's out this weekend against Minnesota, most likely. You saw Bob Landers out for about 3 weeks. You saw Draymond Jones get hurt in the Penn State game. It's like, it's all of this depth is there, which is awesome, but everyone's getting hurt too. You saw that in the first half of the Indiana game too. The defensive line was getting zero pressure. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they broke through. But I think it's more of just that this defensive line needs Nick Bosa back from a fatigue standpoint. Because Bosa carried a lot of that load.
I mean, I really think our defensive MVP up until this point has to be Malik Harrison. I know Draymond Jones has been great, but Malik Harrison, I mean, he's our most valuable linebacker. He covers. He can get sacks. He can spy the QB like he did against Trace McSorley. Did a fantastic job in the second half. Malik Harrison is a stud linebacker. He might be a future first-round pick, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's having a pretty good year in a year that the linebackers have caught a lot of flack. And I believe he's out this weekend as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he'll be out this weekend against Minnesota too, because he and Jonathan Cooper both went on the card. So that's another big loss for this defense. But yeah, Malik Harrison's done a great job this year. And I think the linebacker core as a whole has improved a lot since that TCU game. So that's definitely good to see. And now the focus on the defense has kind of shifted to the defensive backs.
And, you know, the defensive back play hasn't been stellar at all, to say. But, you know, we did lose Kerry Combs. That's a huge loss.
That's a huge loss.
And that safety battle's still getting worked out between, you know, we still don't know if it's Jason Wynn or Isaiah Pryor.
And at this point, we may end up seeing, we saw a little bit in the Indiana game of maybe even some Sean Wade back there, because I don't think the coaches have confidence right now in that position battle working out. And that's, I think, probably the weakest part of that defensive secondary right now.
And I'm going to cut you off right here. You mentioned a player, Sean Wade. I got to introduce new segment we're doing. It's, you know, the Who Lost Their Black Stripe segment. And we're going to get back to talking about the defense. But Marcus Hooker lost his black stripe, Colin, and he is, I think, a candidate to potentially play some safety.
Yeah, I covered him last year for Armchair when I was working on recruiting for Ohio State, and he's coming in as a three-star. Obviously very talented, and also the brother of Malik Hooker, who is going to go down as probably one of the best one-year wonders in college football history. I mean, it had an incredible season. So the fact that he was able to lose his black stripe and immediately be put on special teams, I think that's a promising sign. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him in at safety this year at some point, whether it be in garbage time or if it's necessary in a big game.
I think, honestly, if he can play like his brother did, we'd have a stud back there. And Ohio State needs a ball hawk.
Yeah, because I think that's – so the biggest thing I've noticed this year is when Malik Hooker was back there at safety – You would see these deep balls thrown up by the opposing quarterbacks, and all of a sudden Malik Hooker would be there.
It was like a punt return.
Either be an incompletion, it would either be an incompletion or an interception. That's not happening this year, and whether that's on the current defensive backs or that's just a testament to how insane Malik Hooker was, I don't know. But I think it's definitely something that's missing in this defense. And if Marcus Hooker can provide that, I think he will see the field, because the coaches will realize that something needs to be done.
That when it's all said and done, they need to figure it out sooner than later. Even if it is Sean Wade or they keep the rotation, but that needs to get shut up for this to be a championship defense. Back to the Indiana game. Ben Victor, he had another ridiculous play this weekend, Colin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, wow, what a catch. It was in the back of the end zone sliding. I think he technically got his right toe and knee down and may have even made it an NFL catch with his left toe. I mean, it was a beautiful pass by Dwayne Haskins, but boy, not many receivers would catch that.
Yeah, he even gave the Armchair Ohio State account a retweet of the video we posted of him.
Yeah,
shout out Ben. Great catch. I mean, that was ridiculous. The Penn State catch was obviously better, but just that catch on the run, that's an NFL catch. Like, that's all it is, an NFL catch. 2 feet in, like, right in the breadbasket. I mean, he's going to be making plays Sunday eventually.
Yeah, these last two games have been a coming-out party for him. I mean, those are two incredible catches, and both for touchdowns. He may not go pro this year, but at the very least, that's going to be a huge bump to his future stock.
And speaking of a huge bump to him, though, you got to give it to Dwayne Haskins. I mean, Dwayne Haskins is a fantastic quarterback this season. Great passer. Definitely helps, I think, Ben Victor put up these numbers. But Dwayne Haskins has to be a Heisman front runner at this point. And I know he's – some people are saying Tua, but I just – I don't see it.
Yeah, it's – so there was a metric this week that that had Ohio State at playing the toughest strength of schedule to date, which honestly I wouldn't have guessed, but that's what the metrics say, so I'm not going to argue. But Alabama was outside the top 60, and it's like, look, Tua is insane. I mean, there I don't think you can deny that, but – until Alabama plays a team that's worthy of any kind of recognition, it's hard to put him as the obvious front runner. I may still put Tua at number one, but it's not as cut and dry, I think, as people are saying.
I mean, I just don't understand how – so Tua has less touchdowns and yards, and I know he hasn't played in a second half, but you haven't played anyone. Dwayne Haskins has more of those, and – he's had quality wins, against Penn State, Tulane. He's had a Heisman moment against Penn State, leading the drive to take the lead. I just don't know what – I just don't understand what Tua has done to beat Dwayne Haskins, because it seems like to me people are still basing it off of what he did in national championship, which isn't what the 2018 Heisman shouldn't be about. It's called 2018. I know the game took place in January 2018, but – it's this year. It's this season, not last season.
No, I think the vast majority of that was because of the second half of the national title. I mean, that's the only reason he came in as a Heisman front runner in the first place. I mean, if he never came into that game, Jalen Hurts would probably still be starter. So I would think the vast majority of that hype is coming from the national title, and I agree. It's not. I mean, that's not this season. Now, he's going to have opportunities to prove himself. I mean, he'll have LSU, he'll have Auburn, he'll have Georgia. But it's just, it's right now, I think at the very least, I put them neck and neck.
I mean, I think it has to be neck and neck in my opinion. I don't understand what's the hype about Will Grier. This sounds like a very hot take. I know I'm going to say it. I enjoy West Virginia, but I was watching West Virginia, Kansas.
That was a bad game.
Yeah, and I was just watching Will Grier, though. No, it wasn't Kansas. Kansas State, a couple weeks ago. I know that's a slightly better a lot better defense. It's Kansas and Kansas State. But I was just watching Will Grier, and he misses throws that Haskins and Tua don't. It's just
– yeah.
Haskins and Tua, I think, are just so much more ahead of Grier that it has to be neck and neck. But – It's just, I think, too, there's a little bit of, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but, I mean, on Chewing Clock, they asked a writer about it, about could basically Urban Meyer hold Haskins back from the Heisman? I mean, do you think that whole suspension could be a reason why Haskins isn't up higher?
I mean, boy. I think if anyone else was in the lead right now, I would say, honestly, that might be the reason. But I think the biggest thing holding Haskins back right now is that Tua plays at Alabama. I mean, there's too much hype around Alabama. So I would say that has to be the biggest and main reason. But, I mean, honestly, it's you never know. And that probably is something that's in the back of people's minds. So I could see it.
I found it interesting when they asked Chewing Clock on it. I might go get the clip and ask him for it, because they're an armchair podcast. Check them out, hosted by Armchair All-American at Chewing Clock. But they asked a Heisman voter about it, and they didn't name names, because you couldn't name names with the dude. But they were allowed to ask, like, general questions. And the question they asked was so general that it was 100% Urban Meyer, and it was about Dwayne Haskins. And the voter said, though, they really don't take that into account, but he could see, like, basically people, potentially other voters. He said he wouldn't, but that could be a problem with other voters. And I found that very interesting, because I feel like if it is neck and neck, they're going to give it to Tua because it's at Alabama, and potentially because of the Urban Meyer thing is what I gathered from it.
Yeah, I would probably come to the same conclusion on that. I mean,
I found it interesting. And I don't know how people would react to that. I don't know how Ohio State fans would react. I don't know if they'd go protest in front of the stadium again, or I don't know. But I did also see you know, some places are selling. I'm not going to name them because there are other competitive websites and podcasts, but there are some Haskins for Heisman shirts out there and all that. So, we might have to start. Armchair might have to make one because we're missing out.
Yeah, well, I know a certain place on High Street around campus is running their Haskins for Heisman campaign as well. So I can't remember what place it is. It was a restaurant on High Street, but yeah, it's a popular sentiment.
Absolutely. Now, I guess moving on from, you know, Indiana and Heisman talk and all this, it's time to kind of start talking about what's next, Minnesota.
Yeah, the Golden Gophers. I didn't think too highly of them. I thought they were going to be a 5-7, honestly, team. They're doing well this year. They've lost their last two games to Maryland and Iowa, but they're 3-2. Generally, I think they're playing well. They played Iowa fairly well, and they definitely, have some winnable games down the road. So I think this is a lot better of a Minnesota team than Ohio State fans have been used to the past few years. So I think that's definitely one thing to look at for this Saturday, just right off the bat.
See, I think this Minnesota team is very underachieving. I know they're still rebuilding. I love their young quarterback. I know people don't think he's like the best recruit because he's a walk-on, but Zach Anastad, I think he's doing a fantastic job this year. He has about like 8 touchdown passes. He's won a couple games. I think he's going to be, you know, a really, really good quarterback in the Big Ten for years to come. I will say that.
Yeah, he's already off to an above 100 quarterback rating on the season. 8 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, nearly 1,000 yards. I mean, for a walk-on freshman, he's a walk-on freshman at a Power 5 school that has a lot of history. That's pretty darn impressive.
I'm pretty impressed. I think he could honestly be up for Big Ten Freshman of the Year.
Yeah, I think if he gets Minnesota to a bowl game, which is definitely achievable, I think that would definitely be the biggest bump in his resume for that.
And they also have two decent receivers. It's Tyler Johnson, and they have another guy on the outside. Tyler Johnson's their main threat, though. I mean, he has basically all their yards and all their touchdowns. And then my favorite player in college football, this is so obscure though, Colin, Seth Green.
All right. You're going to have to explain that one to me. Why is that?
All right. This is story time, folks. I've been waiting to tell you this all day. Seth Green is a monster. All right. He is he's labeled as a wide receiver. Minnesota uses him as a wildcat quarterback. And on Yahoo Fantasy Football, I have him in my league, and he's listed as a tight end. So basically no one knows what position he is. No one knows what position this guy is, but all he does is put up numbers. He has 5 rushing touchdowns this year on 93 yards. He has a passing touchdown and a pick. He's basically Minnesota's Tim Tebow. And like Chris Leak Tim Tebow, but Minnesota's version. And my favorite just thing is he's listed as a wide receiver tight end, no receptions, but he's basically their goal line back. And I have him in fantasy, and he fills tight end eligibility, and tight ends in college are so bad. But since he gets all the rushing touchdowns, he's actually like the best tight end in fantasy. But he's not even a tight end. He's my favorite player, Seth Green. I hope you have a pretty good game. I think he's going to have at least 1 or 2 rushing touchdowns against us.
Yeah, I'm looking at, average is only 3 yards a carry, but has the 5 touchdowns. Boy, that is not a stat line you see every day. And then the passing touchdown, man, he's Minnesota's Tim Tebow or maybe Terrell Pryor, too. The passing, the catching, the running, he'll be fun to look for this weekend.
I mean, he's a big goal line threat. I think basically what they do. I'm sorry, continue.
Oh, no. I was just adding on. And yeah, he's, 6'4", 240. That's a big guy running at you at the goal line.
And I think the way they use Zach Anastad, is they use him kind of like Alex Smith, I want to say, like midfield stuff, and then near the goal line they bring Seth Green in and they just pound it with him. I think it's honestly a genius strategy, and I'm curious to see how our defense is going to react to this, because I have a feeling our Ohio State's defense, they might, with all the injuries, they might get very confused by this.
Who do you think Ohio State would use in practice to emulate this?
I would say, I guess, Tate Martell would have to run a lot, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the size factor, too. I don't know. Boy, I'm not sure that Ohio State really has anyone that kind of, unless we use, like, Rashad Berry.
Or, like, I was thinking of, like, the freshman, what's his name, Blue something?
Blue Smith? Yeah, he's, like, he's out of Wayne High School.
He's big. He's a big guy, like, 6'4". Maybe, like, line him up as quarterback and, like, because Seth Green's not going to torch us down the field. He might throw, like, a 10-yard pass from the Wildcat for a touchdown and, like, a blown coverage. Like, he can do that. But he's not going to, like, you know, line up in a Yakum. So I think, like, we can get a scout guy to do something like that.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And, I mean, now that, too, Rodney Smith's gone, their top running back, you know, he's out. He's seeking a 6-year eligibility. I just think they're going to really rely on this guy near the goal line.
Yeah, especially because it's, I mean, like you said, Anderson's had a pretty good year, but it's the passing game isn't necessarily lighting things up. So I would have to imagine that they're going to have to rely a lot on not only Seth Green, but just in general the running game.
And definitely Tyler Johnson, too. I mean, he's their top receiver. I don't know what else they really have on offense, because like they're replacing Rodney Smith. He was a Big Ten like stud. You just don't replace a dude like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's you look at the wide receivers and you see the large contrast between Minnesota and Ohio State. Minnesota has 3 receivers with over 200 yards receiving, and then the next highest is at 19 yards. Ohio State has 7, 8, 9 people in the receiving game that are pretty consistent contributors. I mean, you have 7 main wide receivers. You have J.K. Dobbins. You have Mike Weber. You have Rashad Perry. You have Luke Farrell. All of them are at least fairly consistent. So it's just something that's that really sticks out to me as contrasting between Ohio State and Minnesota's offenses.
Absolutely. I mean, Tyler Johnson, he leads the team with 28 catches, 402 yards, 6 touchdowns. Their second receiver, he's a freshman, Rashad Bateman, 27 catches, 257 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And then no one else has caught in a touchdown. And Chris Altman-Bell, he has 14 catches for 220 yards, no TDs. And then I'm just rushing the ball. Bryce Williams, he's their leading back with 311 yards, but he only has 1 touchdown. So basically their offense has just been, their scoring's been Seth Green, Tyler Johnson, and Bateman. And then one other guy out of those 3 has a touchdown. So that's very underwhelming.
Yeah, and with Bryce Williams not only just the 1 touchdown, but averaging less than 4 yards per carry, that's not going to do it against a front 7 like an Ohio State front 7.
Absolutely not. And I always like to throw this in here to talk about it. College kickers are so inconsistent and they're fickle. Like they are the most inconsistent thing in the world, in my opinion. But if a team has a decent kicker, it's always worth mentioning. And Emmett Carpenter is a solid kicker this year. I mean, 15 for 15 on extra points, 8 for 9 on field goals. The only one he missed was in the 40s. I think he has a long of 53 this season, so he has some range. Minnesota, if they get in field goal range, they're going to get some points. Like, they're not going to be shanking field goals.
Carpenter's a pretty consistent kicker, and that's, like you said, it's something that is hard to come by these days in college football and, well, even pro football. Whenever you have a consistent kicker, it's nice being able to rely on someone once you get inside 40 yards or whatever. I mean, heck, I was watching the TCU game before we started recording this, and TCU punted on the opposing 32. Like, you just can't have that. You need a kicker. So that is definitely a very good sign for Minnesota. They're going to get points if they get on Ohio State's side of the 50 generally.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how big it is to have a good kicker in college football. Nuremberg's been pretty solid this season. I really have no complaints. I mean, I feel like he's been around forever. He's been around since the national championship year. He's like the Perry Ellis of kickers.
Well, I tell you what, I believe last time I checked, Nuremberger is 15 extra points away from holding the record for most extra points made without a miss. Right now, he's 216 for 216 in his career. So that is definitely something to keep your eye on the next couple of games as well.
You know when they flash that stat up, whatever game it is, it's going to get missed. It's just the way.
Well, there's a good chance it could be at Purdue. So it's like, I wonder if Purdue would consider doing that just to try it.
It's definitely going to happen. And speaking of Purdue, that's a night game now.
Yeah, we're going to be at that one for the radio, and we were not expecting that one to be a night game. So we'll be driving back after. That's going to be a late night. But I tell you what, first of all, Ohio State has a losing record at Purdue this century. A night game at Purdue doesn't scare me nearly as much as a noon game on ESPN2 does.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm not looking forward to watching it at 12. I hate 12 games.
So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, going back to Nuremberg, he has been pretty consistent for Ohio State. And yeah, it feels like he's been here forever, because I think he had a regular red shirt. Then he had, I think, like an injury red shirt the year that Tyler Durbin was the kicker. So yeah, dude's been here forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy how long he's been here. On the defensive side of the ball, they don't have Antoine Winfield Jr. That's a huge blow to them. And then
that's a huge blow on the defense, but also in the kick returning game. I think he had a kick return for a touchdown in his first game in college.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's the son of former Ohio State great Antoine Winfield. It would have been nice to watch him play this weekend, but it's just unfortunate. He too might get another year eligibility, I believe.
Yeah, I should hope at least that the NCAA would grant him that, because he got injured in like the second game. So
I think they'll have him and Rodney Smith both back next season. Yeah. So now, I guess since we're getting close to the college football playoff, we started this last week, Colin. We're going to do our weekly college football playoff rankings, starting from 6 down to 1. So we're going to do basically the first two out, and then your top 4.
Okay, all right. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll start. I want to start with our 5 and 6s, and then I'll start, and you do. I'll do 5, 6, and you do 5, 6, and then we'll give our top 4.
All right, sounds good.
All right, so like this is like if you were voting on the college football playoff today, like the final 4. Not predicting the future, like
voting today. All right.
If it was like up until this point in the season, you don't have any future games. It's just like, what have they done? Not projecting, just like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think I got you.
Okay.
That's all right. All right.
So,
I like it.
So at 6, I got Penn State. I think they're really, really good this season. I really do.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're a very good team. That's all I can say about that. Now, do you want me to give my 6, or are you going to go your 6 and 5?
I'll do my. You can do your 6.
All right, my 6. I'm going to go with West Virginia. Penn State's a really good team, but they've yet to really have that marquee win yet. Really, all they have is a good loss to Ohio State. West Virginia went on the road, beat a pretty good Texas Tech team pretty handily. So I would say that that's a pretty good resume so far, and they're still undefeated.
Dang, that West Virginia was actually a really good pick. I like that. I just can't take him seriously though. I think they're like 7.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think like if you put Penn State up against West Virginia, Penn State would win that. That's just my take on that. I know West Virginia has done more up until this point, but I feel like it should be the better team. It also resume should be in there, but if a team's clearly better, I think it's hard to justify putting them in over.
Yeah, I agree, and I just don't know what to expect from West Virginia either. I mean, they're going to have a big test this weekend against Iowa State on the road, but then really 2 weeks from now at Texas. We'll get a better picture of what they are then, and maybe if they're a top 14 by that point. So, no, I agree that I just don't know if I can trust them yet.
It's like finding the balance of, like, I guess, like, what have you done this season, and, like, also a little bit of the eye test.
Yeah, I agree.
So, going to five now, I had Clemson. I think five's low for Clemson, some people are going to say, because they project them to be, you know, at least top four. I have them five just because Trevor Lawrence and the whole quarterback situation, and Syracuse almost came in and mopped them on the road and really embarrassed their season, but they basically got bailed out by Etienne, and I think they're kind of dysfunctional right now.
That's where I also had Clemson. I had them at five. They haven't really looked all that impressive this season. I mean, Texas A&M played them close at Kyle Field, and this is going to sound like a hot take, but I don't think Texas A&M's that good this year.
I thought they were good, Colin, when they were playing, you know, Clemson kind of tough, but yeah. I mean, they won't go to Alabama, and their season's basically been downhill since the Alabama game.
Yeah, and then, like, you already mentioned the Syracuse game. I think Clemson's going to be in the playoffs when the season is done, but right now I just don't think they're as good as the four teams that I have ahead of them.
Absolutely, and the Syracuse game, too. Like, I watch a lot of Syracuse football. I know that sounds weird. My dad's an alum there. So we watch as much Syracuse football as we can. Syracuse is like an 8-4 team. Like, they're good. They'll go to the Pinstripe Bowl. Like, they're decent, but Clemson should not be almost losing to them. Like, that's like us almost losing to I'm not gonna say Indiana. I'm not gonna say Indiana because Indiana is they're basically Syracuse, but
I guess that's like us almost losing to Nebraska on a normal Nebraska year.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. Or Minnesota. It's just like any 8-4 team, but this Syracuse team's a lot better though than most Syracuse teams. Like, Eric Dungy's a beast, and I just think that this team's more special than last couple of years. This team might be a 9-5 or 9-3. 9-5 is not even possible. What am I saying? it's been a long night. My number four, I got Georgia. I would have had LSU here, but LSU, you know, I had to go blow it.
Yeah.
I think
Joe Burrow let us down. Just kidding. No, he didn't. But
no.
The rest of the LSU team did.
We just need them to start beating Georgia and Alabama. That's how they can.
Yes, I agree. Definitely.
They ain't let us down. They're just, you know, we got to keep them in check. They got to go out and do their thing. Now, I have Georgia at four just because. I mean, they're in the national championship game last year, and they haven't lost, so I can't keep them out of my top four. Like, that's just my logic on that.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as they haven't been as dominant as the teams ahead of them, but they've been more consistent than Clemson, so I'm like, yeah, sure, four's good. Right? That's really how I decided on Georgia being fourth.
All right, so we have both Georgia at four. At number three, I have Notre Dame. I'm a Notre Dame hater because I'm half Irish, and I know so many of the stereotypical, I'm Irish, so I'm a Notre Dame fan. And, like, I kind of liked them, too, when I was, like, you know, younger and I was Irish. And I have a hat signed by actual Rudy. But
okay.
I'm sick of their charade. I'm sick of the whole charade. They got Gordon Gee fired. Yeah, they did. Now, I can say because I'm Irish Catholic, like, it's fair. It's fair for me to joke about it. I'm not offended. But they got Gordon Gee fired and all that. And I don't know. They're just – they're special this year, man. Ian Book, he's a stud. It pains me to say this because Notre Dame's like a Michigan to me. But Dexter Williams, Ian Book, Brian Kelly, like, this team is – This team is really good. Really good. This is their most talented team since when they had Monty Teo.
Yeah, I was really high on Notre Dame going into the year. I picked them as a playoff team going into the season. Not for armchair. I think I did it after I did my armchair article. I was really high on Notre Dame this year. Then Brandon Wimbush just did not look good in those first few games, and I started thinking that they were in trouble. Then comes Ian Book, and boy, they are lighting it up. Doesn't seem to matter who they play. I mean, this is a really, really good Notre Dame team.
I mean, and that win against Virginia Tech
as well.
that win, you have them as well too at 3-8.
Yeah,
that win against two Virginia Tech, really good looking win in my opinion.
Virginia Tech lost to Old Dominion at home, but Lane Stadium at night is one of the toughest atmospheres in college football, and this is still a Virginia Tech team that could very well win their division in the ACC. So that's a really good win on the road, not to mention Stanford, not to mention Michigan. So that's not only are they looking good when they're playing, but they also have the resume to back it up.
And, I mean, the way the rest of their schedule looks, I mean, USC, that's going to be a good game, but I really think Notre Dame has a shot to win out or go at least 11-1. If they go 11-1, I really think they're going to be in. I mean, they're looking probably better than Ohio State or Alabama right now.
I think it depends on who their loss is to, definitely. I mean, if they lose to Pitt this weekend, boy, I don't know. But if they lose to, like, Notre Dame last weekend of the year, maybe. It's just – and also they don't have the benefit of playing a conference title, so they have a lot less wiggle room with getting one loss. It'll depend on how everyone else shakes out. But, no, they're looking really good.
You know what? All right. The more I'm thinking about it, I'm moving Notre Dame up to number two. I got it. They've done more than Alabama, honestly, in my opinion. I think.
Whoa! Hold up. Does that mean you're putting Bama at three?
Yeah, I'm putting Bama at three. I'm putting Bama.
That's a hot take.
I'm putting Bama at three. All right, look at this. If we're gonna have the comp, like, all right, we want to get as many conferences in this as possible. If I'm the committee, I'm looking at this. We move Bama down to three. The ratings are better for basically the SEC championship because it's a 3-4 Elim game. That'll be nuts. Everyone's happy because you get Georgia-Bama again. The viewers are happy on that. I know this sounds so corrupt, but like this is definitely what goes through some of their minds. I'm just like playing into it. They go play each other. It's corrupt. You know, it's not corrupt, but they collude, and it's Alabama and Georgia SEC championship. Loser goes home. Then, you know, Notre Dame's in the playoff because they're going to – you could get a game of Georgia-Alabama, and then you get Notre Dame in the playoff – like in Alabama or Georgia, Ohio State, and then they'd like somehow, you know, sneak Clemson in, the ratings would be huge.
Oh, see, here was my dream playoff, right? All right, so this is kind of related. Actually, no, it's definitely related. So it was, I had Ohio State at one and Alabama at one, Ohio State four, right? Because you want the big Ohio State and Alabama matchup in the semifinal. Then at two, you got Notre Dame. Three, you got Miami, because Miami can still win the ACC with one loss and get in.
Yeah, right? Catholics so versus then convicts.
You got Catholics versus convicts.
And that LSU then, loss doesn't look that bad now.
Exactly. And then you have an Ohio State-Miami national title rematch.
Whew. I love it.
That's what I'm rooting for the rest of the season, by far.
I would want to see... I don't know. I want to see Ohio State versus Clemson in the playoff again. I want Clemson.
I feel like it's just bad juju at this point. We're 0-3 against them.
No, at this point we got to fight for honor, man. Like at this point, there's nothing worse
than against the South Carolina schools.
Yeah, there'll be some weird, like the Vegas line for that would be so weird. I feel like they'd like.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they'd want everyone to pick Clemson, and then Ohio State would win by, like, 29 or something, 28.
Yeah, I feel like they would put the spread at, like, boy, like 2.5 Ohio State, maybe. Entice everyone to take Clemson, and then Buckeyes win that.
Absolutely.
That's how I would see it playing out. Anyway.
So, yeah. Number,
so you have Alabama 3.
Yeah, I do. And the more I'm thinking about this, they don't really impress me that much. Like, all right, the receivers, pretty good. Like, Jerry Jeudy, Waddle, Smith, Ruggs, sick receiving core. I got to admit it. And Tua, he can light it up. The running game, though, Damian Williams, I think he isn't that good. I think he's one of the worst backs they've had in a while.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't do anything special. He's not Derrick Henry. He's not Trent Richardson. He's not a Eddie Lacy or Mark Ingram. He's Damian Williams. Like, I'm not intimidated by that run game. I think that run game could really be stopped, and it's just going to be interesting because I think they're going to run into a team that can, you know, really cover well, and a team with not a elite defensive line, but a defensive line that can stop the run, and that's going to be a problem on offense.
Yeah, and I think the counter to that is, do they even need to run? I mean, when you have Tua throwing 10 completions for 350 yards and 5 touchdowns or whatever, boy, that's hard to stop no matter what.
It is, but there's going to be a game where I think Tua is going to slip up. I mean, no one's perfect, Colin. No one's perfect.
I agree. I'm not sure it'll come in the regular season, but I don't see Alabama repeating this year. So somewhere along the line, they'll slip up.
I mean, all right, what's the best secondary you can think of in college? I know this is a tough question, but who has the best secondary?
Boy. Not going to say Ohio State.
No, can't say that. Maybe like last year, a couple years ago.
Yeah. Man.
This is tough. This is really tough.
It is.
Oh, Michigan has a really good secondary, but
honestly, I might have to go with Michigan.
But, I mean, Alabama's not going to see them. It needs to be
Michigan or Clemson.
I can see Clemson. I think Clemson would have a good secondary. Georgia, I think, would want to get revenge on Tua. I think they'd have some tape on him. But I've completely neglected. So, yeah, Alabama's 3 on mine. Notre Dame's 2. Obviously, 1, I'm putting Ohio State now. Just because I think our body of work, all the stuff we've gone through with Urban, all that, TCU, no problem. Without Urban, no problem. And you know, on the road, I know it's technically neutral, but, you know, smack them without our best defensive player, too. Go to Penn State. So we basically, you know, stop the whole whiteout in their tracks and have another epic comeback. I don't understand what is where we don't match up with any of these teams other than we don't have Nick Bosa.
No, I agree. So I'm going to put Ohio State at 2 and Alabama at 1. What I see is I think Ohio State has the best resume right now in college football. But watching these Buckeye games, the defense, I think the offense is a championship caliber offense. I think the defense is a get to the playoff caliber defense. I don't think the defense is a championship caliber defense. Caliber defense right now, so I think just by the eye test, that's why I have Alabama ahead of Ohio State. But I also think that Ohio State would probably match up the best with Alabama.
I mean, I think we have I think Notre Dame has the best resume. I think we have the second best resume because I think Virginia Tech, Stanford, and Michigan so far.
Notre Dame's problem is their good wins keep losing.
Yeah.
you have Stanford now has 3 losses, and Virginia Tech lost to Old Dominion. It's like normally on every other year, you see Michigan, you see Stanford, you see Virginia Tech, and you're like, holy cow, that is insane. This year, you're like, wow, okay, those are really good wins. So I think that's the biggest thing hurting Notre Dame is that they're playing really good teams that somehow keep losing.
Yeah, I think that but I mean, we're going to play Michigan, so I'm just going to assume we're going to beat Michigan because that's the way it's been. I know they're really good this year, Michigan. I'm just going to
– Yeah, I tell you what, I'm very worried about that game as an Ohio State fan.
I am too. And, you know, it's looking more and more like Michigan could win the East with that game. And that has me thinking, what if we lose that game? We're 11-1. Do we get in?
Boy, I –
Because I think we're talented enough. I think we're talented enough.
Yeah, I think, man, I I think the Big 12 will probably eat itself up. I think the Pac-12 will as well. So that leaves really Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State. So if Michigan beats us, wins the Big Ten, you've got Clemson, Alabama, Michigan probably for sure. Then it's between, it would be like an 11-1 Ohio State, a 12-1 Georgia, and maybe a 12-0 or an 11-1 Notre Dame. Boy, I don't know. I think the winner of Ohio State, Michigan goes to the playoffs. I think the loser goes to a really nice New Year's Six Bowl.
Oh, you hate to see that.
Yeah.
I could totally see that being like the Michigan State scenario where great team. It's just frustrating, though, because the same thing happens to Alabama, but they'll get in the playoff just because they're Alabama. I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, and this year's strange, too, because now, chaos always happens in college football. It's going to happen. It always happens. You can never bet against it happening. But at the same time, I feel like we're heading to an unprecedented number of playoff contenders this season.
Chaos is coming, Colin. We haven't had enough chaos yet.
Definitely coming. It could be this weekend.
Honestly,
this weekend is looking like it's a prime, medium rare steak for chaos this weekend.
It is. There hasn't been. Oh, dude, yeah. A nice big ribeye, maybe some bacon on that. Some nice A1 or Peter Luger sauce, whatever sauce you're into. Yeah, dude, chaos is coming this weekend. No, I honestly don't think anyone's safe this weekend. Most weekends, I'm like, yeah, this is a lock.
Yeah.
A lot of huge games this weekend. Georgia LSU, right?
I think so, yeah. Boy, I'm excited.
Georgia
for that one.
LSU.
I think that's like a 7:30, so I should be able to watch it.
Georgia LSU. Michigan, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Bama playing?
ITT Tech, I don't know. I don't know. Actually, I think it's Missouri.
Ooh, it's Drew Locke.
It's a pretty decent team, but they're not going to beat Alabama.
I will say Drew Locke, if he beats Bama, his name's going to get thrown into the Heisman race.
For sure.
Drew Locke's hot stock will rise like quicker than, I don't even know, just something that Michael Kendricks bought on the stock market. Like, his stock will just fly up. I mean, if he beats Bama, he's going to jump Will Greer. He'll probably be like 3.
I mean, and it'd probably be well-deserved too, because he's a really good quarterback. So it's just he's been hampered by a really, really struggling defense this season. So,
yeah, I mean, we'll see though. So much chaos this weekend. I'm nervous for the noon game just because it's a noon game, and I hope no one's sleeping through it.
Yeah, no, that's I hate noon games for that reason in particular. Yeah, I mean, what else do we have this weekend? Pitt Notre Dame could be fun. Washington Oregon, that's another big one.
Washington.
And then and then Colorado USC. Colorado's still undefeated. West Virginia Iowa State. Yeah, and I think there's going to be some chaos this weekend for sure.
I'm excited. Know what else I'm excited for, Colin? Is moving on to our bashing the SEC segment.
Perfect. All righty.
So
do you want to go first?
I'll let you lead it off. What do you got for us?
All right. So, teams that play 10-plus Power 5 opponents in 2018 per conference. The Big 10, 11. The Big 12, 9. The Pac-12, 8. The ACC, 5. The SEC, 0. 0 teams that play at least 10 Power 5 opponents in the SEC. That is prime Southeast scheduling for you in college football.
That's ridiculous. And also, too, they don't schedule enough conference games, which just makes me so mad.
Exactly. Now, I think the remedy to that, and this is kind of a tangent, would be everyone go back to 10 teams in the conference. That's what I want. And everyone play 9 games. Just like the Big 12. Anyway, but I agree. They don't play enough conference games.
Bashing the SEC take, Hugh Freeze is back, man. I mean, the disgraced Ole Miss coach. I know he resigned and, you know, all the good stuff. We're not going to get into it, but Laramie Tunsil, just his draft night. Laramie Tunsil's draft night was historic and one of Hugh Freeze's players. But Hugh Freeze, though, he is back. He is Saturday Down South reported that he is back in coaching. He's going to be the offensive coordinator at the Arizona team of the Alliance of American Football.
I mean, it's was that the whole motorcycle incident at Ole Miss? Was that Hugh Freeze?
No, I was Bobby Petrino. That was something else. Petrino. Hugh Freeze, right, I think. Right. I think Hugh Freeze was something with
escort players.
Player, maybe something like that, and something with escorts and recruits. Yeah, I think it was something like kind of similar to Rick Pitino or something, like something like
that. I mean, at least I guess he can get away with that in a professional league. So,
very true. He's gonna fit in good. No, but he's back. That I found that pretty funny. That's really it though. This week it was kind of quiet by the SEC because chaos is coming.
Absolutely, looking forward to it.
Moving on to what is that team up north up to? Basically, Big Cass kind of wanted me to touch on this. He actually sent this in, so shout out Big Cass. Hope the honeymoon's going well. He sent this to me. He wanted us to talk about why Jim Harbaugh was named to the 2018 Dodd Trophy midseason watch list, which is basically Coach of the Year in the country. And basically, Jim Harbaugh was on it. Paul Chryst was on it. And James Franklin. Well, I don't know how you could be on that if you run it on 4th and 5. Why is he still on this?
That was a historically bad play call. Anyway,
I still gotta talk about it. It's like 2 weeks after, and it's just like
I you know, we were sitting in the booth on that one, and
I laughed.
My partner Dylan called it as it happened, and then we just kind of sat there in shock. And both of our first phrases were, "What in the world were they thinking?"
I've never been that stressed out during a game, and I literally burst out in laughter at how bad of a play call that was. I literally spit my drink out of my mouth and was laughing like hysterically on the floor. James Franklin, what are you doing? Trace McSorley has been balling all game, and he just.
Yeah, 461 yards. Yeah,
right up the gut to Miles Sanders, right into Chase Young.
That was, you can't be on a Coach of the Year watch list after that.
Zero shot. You got to get him out off the list. Give us Lovie Smith is more deserving of a Coach of the Year, or like Chris Ash than James Franklin. But
Chris Ash, that's poor guy.
Just what he has to deal with, he should be on there. But the fact that Jim Harbaugh's on there, I found that interesting. I don't know. I mean, does that mean people are having more confidence in him, or is this kind of just they're putting him on here just to because they need a big name? What's your opinion on this?
You know, I think it's the confidence thing. I think Michigan's looked pretty good outside of whatever that Northwestern game was. I think if. I think there's definitely still a way that he would be deserving of winning it this season, depending on what they do the rest of his games.
My biggest thing, though, about Jim Harbaugh being on there is just the fact that I completely lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. Just that Jim Harbaugh, I was watching a play by the Giants. Odell's, like, yelling at someone. I'm not a big Giants fan, but I gotta see what Odell's doing. He just yelled at someone, so I kind of zoned out right there. But Jim Harbaugh, I just gotta say, he's on the hot seat. Like, if he doesn't win, I think this game against Wisconsin, he's in trouble.
Mm. See, I see it as if you're Michigan, who are you going to replace him with? Hey, you know, there's no one else. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is. In my opinion, now this is going to be very unpopular among a lot of Ohio State fans. I think he's a top-tier coach. I really do. So I see it as if you're going to go out and fire a top-tier coach, who are you going to replace him with? It's Brian Day. I mean, that's really the only option. So, I don't think if he loses this Wisconsin game, he's on the hot seat, especially I mean, if he's able to beat even just one of Michigan State or Ohio State, I think that's a pretty solid year.
And you mentioned Ryan Day. I know he only coached three games, but I think he should have been on the list for consideration. We know Urban Meyer was never going to get put on the list no matter what he did this year. Which is, I think, also kind of another reason why Jim Harbaugh got put on this. I think they needed another guy because Mark D'Antonio, obviously, he hasn't done anything great this season. Michigan State has severely underperformed. So I guess Jim Harbaugh, you kind of need in there, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's a big name. And if he is able to excel in this tough stretch of games, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be on there.
Agreed. What are your thoughts on the Wisconsin-Michigan game? Who do you think wins?
Well, I had all the confidence in Michigan until every single ESPN reporter picked them. every ESPN reporter last week picked Oklahoma, and we saw how that turned out. So, you know, Wisconsin has a lot of injuries on defense, and going into the season, actually, so my official armchair picks, I had Ohio State and Michigan making the playoff. Technically speaking, that could still happen. I don't see it happening, but this is a very good Michigan team. I say like a 24-14 Michigan win.
Is it on the road or away from Michigan?
It's at the Big House.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. I'm thinking. I still feel like, though, no. Wisconsin's not afraid, though, of the Big House because they just played at Kinnick at night. So they're battle-tested, in my opinion. I know they lost to BYU, but that's an early loss. I think Wisconsin wins. I really do.
What? How much do you think?
24-21.
Okay.
Like a field goal?
Close game, yeah. I see it as either Wisconsin wins by, like, 3 points or Michigan wins double digits. I don't think Michigan pulls this out in a nail biter. If they win, I think they're going to win pretty handily, or Wisconsin somehow does it and barely scrapes by.
I mean, if you love smash mouth football, this is going to be the game for you, though.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah, so one of the ESPN reporters picked 9-6 Michigan. I love it. That is quintessential Big Ten football.
It's going to be, this is a much must watch game. I'm really pumped for it because it's going to be like, you're going to see at least 7-8 fullback dives by both teams this game. At least, like, they use the fullback so much. Michigan has Ben Mason. Wisconsin has like 4, like Austin Ramchek or something. Some Ramish. He's one. He's really good. I'm just excited to see the fullbacks go at it. It's going to be basically who has the better fullback.
I put it on my Twitter during the Indiana game. I really miss Ohio State running a fullback in I formation. That's all I want back. 2 tight ends, a fullback. That's all I want back in life.
You know what? You're right. Ohio State needs to bring back the fullback. That's what we're missing.
Who's the last 4 fullback we had? Boring?
Boring. Carlos Hyde, I felt like, kind of played like a fullback that first season under Urban Meyer because he was like he was like a power back that, like, that was the season where he didn't run for 1,000 yards. I feel like he was like, we kind of used him like a fullback, but then we got him like in shape and everything. But yeah, Bourne, I got to say. I mean, who from this team do you think would be the fullback? Probably like, I think like Luke Farrell would be a good fullback.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be one of the tight ends, which isn't really ideal. But yeah, I'm not sure there's anyone else really on offense that would be big enough. I mean, yeah, Luke Farrell, Rashad Berry.
Sam Hubbard would have made a good fullback.
Dude can do everything. He was a safety in high school.
Yeah, he plays fullback for the Bengals on the goal line and all that now.
Yep.
I mean, he scored his first touchdown last week, pick six, or fumble recovery. It looked like a pick six to me. I'm not sure what it was. It's one of those weird ones where, like, it gets hit out of the quarterback's hand, but it like right into a dude, so it doesn't drop, so you can't tell. It was one of those, but he housed it. As we wrap up, though, here, Colin, we're going to do our keys to the game, and then I guess I'm going to give a bet. I have really no idea what to bet on. I'm going to make up something. So you know what? I'm really bad with my picks, too. Don't listen to the Big Ten, Armchair Big Ten's picks. Everyone.
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting at like 28%.
Everyone, yeah, we need to send out an apology. This is going to be this is going to be the audio clip right here. Everyone, we need to send out an apology. The Big Ten Armchair All-Americans picks are so bad, but they're still better than Clay Travis. And we don't know who to pick. But if you want to like pick against us, it's actually a really good strategy. Go to mybookie.com and use promo code NUTS25. Like I said before, they match you dollar for dollar, and like you get an extra $25 if you, you know, put it in. I think if you use it past dinner time, I think like 6 p.m. or something. But just the fact, though, that the Armchair Big Ten Twitter pick'em game is so bad, it's just hilarious.
Yeah, it's I'm having a rough year with that. What's strange is like my Twitter picks that I do for the national college football, I'm above 500. But boy, when it comes to the Big Ten, I am horrible.
I will say I'm positive I picked Ohio State correctly in every game this year, like the spread, who they're playing. I've done that every game. I'm like 6-0. But
oh yeah, the Penn State game. It was 3.5 for Ohio State. I picked Penn State to cover, Ohio State to win by 1 point, Ohio State to fail a 2-point conversion. And then something else. And
I had like, that too.
Why didn't I actually bet on this game? Because I would have made so much money.
I had that too, but I can't pick like Rutgers, Illinois, or like this stuff. Oh, no, this stuff's so unpredictable. Like, I'm shocked I'm at like 40% or something. I don't even know what I'm at. I was about like 44, but I lost a bunch. Probably at 40, I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I'm bad.
So yeah. My best bet, everyone, is go to armchairallamericans.com. Go on, I guess, the Armchair Big Ten pick'em page and just pick at the, find the person who did the lowest. It's probably like me, Colin. Big Cass wasn't doing too good at one point. I saw he was like in the 30s or something. Just pick whatever we don't pick. Like whatever we pick, pick the opposite, and you're going to win so much money.
I guess for a national spread this week, best bet, I would definitely take Tennessee. I would take Auburn 15.5 over Tennessee. Tennessee's bad, folks.
So, you heard it. Tennessee minus 15.5. Take them. that's the way it's going. Like we use logic and reasoning, and then just nope.
Yep.
So I guess as we wrap up here, Colin, my keys to the game, I'm going to give them away. Ohio State, run the rock. And then, you know, hit the big plays to Victor. Screens to Campbell. Just keep doing your thing on offense. Don't change it. On defense, my keys to the game is don't get confused by the quarterback switching.
Yeah, on offense, I would have to say work on the running game because it's gone progressively downhill each game. So work on the running game. Get back into a groove. On defense, the coaches said they're not going to do it, but I would love to see Ohio State work on zone defense versus just man-to-man. I think that would be the key for this defensive secondary. So, yeah, those would be my keys to the game for Ohio State.
Absolutely. And as we kind of wrap it up here, Colin, just want to say thank you for coming on and thank you for taking the place of Big Cast. We're definitely going to have you on more. We're very disorganized on this podcast, as you can tell. I think everyone can tell, but it's a good time. I'm going to have you on plenty more. And I hope the rest of your semester is going well and everything. And are you calling the game this weekend at home for Scarlet and Gray?
Yeah, I'm driving. So right now I'm on fall break. I'm driving back up at 6 in the morning, Saturday morning. So I'll be reporting at 10 a.m. sharp.
That's going to be a fun drive.
Oh, boy. Yeah, not looking forward to it.
Where is it? Are you from Cleveland, that area?
Just north of Cincinnati.
Oh, Cincy. Oh, you know what? So how are you a Browns fan, or how did that come?
Yeah, so my dad's from east of Columbus, so he grew up a Browns and Reds fan. So I'm Browns and Reds. Yeah, it's a sad life for my professional sports. In my lifetime, because I'm also a Blue Jackets fan, in my lifetime I've never seen one of my pro sports teams win a playoff round.
At least the Reds have history, though. That's an odd fan thing that like Browns, Reds, Blue Jackets. I've never met someone like that.
All three C's.
That's amazing. All right, that does for episode 22 of A Bunch of Nuts. Check out armchairallamericans.com. Check out Colin's articles, my articles. buy a shirt in our Teespring store, Bunch of Nuts shirts, long sleeves, short sleeves, and go use promo code NUTS25 for mybookie.com. And as always, go Bucks.